Det är så här stora fatet. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. There are some things that we have in our life, and things that interfere with our life that we have to go along with, which are called muqaddarat. Muqaddarat are those aspects and those things in our life that we do not have a choice in. We don't have a choice in certain things in our life. Yes, certain things we do have a choice in, and that we do take our own actions with our own free will. But there are certain things that we don't have a choice in, and these are decided by Allah. They're destined by Allah, and that's the way it's going to happen. These are known as muqaddarat. These are known as things that are destined. Because of the fact that they're so common, and they happen every day, that we look at them as being accidental. Something that's incidental. We don't pay attention to them. We tend to ignore them. As something common, something that happens every day. And these are things that are decided by Allah, and we are going through them, and we have to live according to them. And everything that happens to us, you see, is affected by these muqaddarat, by these destined things that are around us. In between all of these muqaddarat, in between all these things that we don't have a choice in, Allah has put us and given us some choice and some places that we can make our choice. Not everywhere. There are only certain places that we can make our choice, that we can do something that we want. And when He gives us that room and that space to make our choices, even in those spaces and that those circumstances, we see that even there we truly are unable to do exactly what we want. Even in those places, we can't just do exactly what we want. Even when we want to do something, when we intend to do something, it must coincide and be according to the muqaddarat of Allah. We think that we have a free choice and that we have free will and we can do as we please, but we see that no. Even in things that we have choice in, when we make a decision to do them, when we intend to do them, there also we have a problem. We see that it many times when we do things, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen the way we planned it. It doesn't happen the way we intended it. I want to do this. My intention is there, and I even began doing this. But at the end, it doesn't happen. Imam Ali alayhi salam had said,
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad Muhammad Ali Muhammad.
He said, I came to believe in Allah by what? By the breaking of my intentions. Every time I intended to do things, you see that qadr of Allah, the decree of Allah comes in the way and changes my plan. You see, our plans don't change muqaddarat. It is muqaddarat that changes our plan. We can intend to do things, but it doesn't mean that it's going to happen. And this is some of the details we need to understand about muqaddarat. Because as I said, that your journey to Allah, your love of Allah, and how much you will begin to love Allah will only happen when you start paying attention to muqaddarat. That's where it comes from. Let me read you another hadith from Imam Ali Radha alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Imam says that when Allah intends to do something, when Allah wants to do something to someone, He freezes his brain, his aql, and his mind, stops it. Then He does what He wants with him. And then when He's done with him, then He gives His mind back to him. He gives His aql back to him. And then this person that Allah has done this to him is wondering, what happened? He's wondering, what happened? Many times we see when we are in this state of shock, looking at ourselves and saying, what just happened? This is Allah doing something, His qadr and His decree coming in, blocking our plan and making a different direction for us. People start off going into something and they end up somewhere. For example, how many of you plan to become that which you are right now? Look at your childhood. Look at your youth. Look at you as a young person. And just imagine, how many of you looking at yourself right now in the mirror can look back and say, this is exactly the way I wanted to be when I was an adult? Right? Did it ever occur to us that what is it that changed our plans, that made us different, that we ended up somewhere else other than where we would have? You see, this is where muqaddarat affect our lives. Really, when Allah wants to do something to someone, it happens. And you won't even know it. It's like Allah, you know, tells everyone, freeze, everyone freezes. And he goes and says, okay, you know what? Your hair is going. So he takes her hair out. The next thing you notice, wow, when did I lose my hair? When did I start losing my hair? Right? This is what happens. This is muqaddarat, my friends. Let's explain more if you send the salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
When we look at the things that we can do, even in those things we are truly unable to do exactly what we want to do because Allah's decrees are blocking it. So in other words, what I mean to say is that you just can't do any crime that you want to do. You just can't just do whatever you want to do because something is blocking it. You can't do it. Even if you want to do it. But then what happens is this, that when you want to do something, if it's bad, if it's evil, and you want to do it, then what happens is that, really, that intention that you have of evil, or the intention you have of good, really plays a part in what you are going to be. What you're going to end up to be, even though your evil intention never materialized. Even though your good intention did not materialize, but it does have an effect on us. It does have an effect on us. That's why it's said in Hadith that some people will be raised with Fir'aun. Some people will be raised with Fir'aun. Now you might think that, okay, let's see who are the people being raised with Fir'aun. Saddam, you know, and you see that, okay, he's one of them. Bush, you know. And then you can take another list, right? But really, it's not them, right? Really, not them, right? These people who will be raised with Fir'aun did not have any rule, did not have any power. Did not have any power or rule. They didn't have any, the only thing they owned was their own home. The only people they ruled over was their own family. And then when they will be raised on the Day of Judgment, they'll be right next to Fir'aun and they'll be like, what am I doing next to him? Because they'll say that you are also a Fir'aun. You're also a Fir'aun. So how did I become a Fir'aun? I didn't rule any place. I didn't have a kingdom. See, it's not the kingdom that made Fir'aun Fir'aun. It's his decisions and his actions in the time he was allotted by Allah and the freedom that he was given by Allah and the space that he was given by Allah, what he did in that specific moment, that time that he was given, he just did evil. He did wrong. It doesn't matter if you were given 100 years or if you're given 1 year. If all you have done in the time that you have been given to do things by your own free will and choice is evil, then you are raised with Fir'aun. Because Fir'aun, the time that he was allotted to make his decisions, the time that he was given to do his things by his choice, he did what? He did wrong, he disobeyed, he did sin, he did crimes, just in the time that he was allotted. So Allah is saying that this person is going to hell. Now Allah only gave you a 1 year instead of 100 years, he just gave you 1 year. And he said, just make your decisions in this 1 year. What are you going to do? I want to see. So when you make those decisions in 1 year, and all you do is wrong till the end of your time, it doesn't matter if it's 1 year or 100 years, because your intention and your reasoning is that if I had more, I would have done the same. Really, if I had more, I would have done the same. Subhanallah. Allah gives us a small chance to make our decisions. A small window he opens up, gives you the opportunity. Now decide. Now it's your choice right here. Make your choice. And the choices we make in the time that we are allotted is what defines us and affects us forever. Allah doesn't give you all the time and all the choices as you please. No, you are given a specific opportunity to make a choice, you make it. Make it at that time. Otherwise, it's going away. Whether your choice is good or bad. Let me read a hadith for you if you send salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
The Prophet said, Niyatul mu'min khayrun min amalih. The intention of a believer is better than his actions. Wa niyatul kafir sharrun min amalih. And the niyat of a kafir is worse, is more evil than his action. Why is that? It's because of muqaddarat, because of Allah's decree and the realities that are around us that are binding us, holding us back. I told you about realities, right? When you pay attention to reality, I might want to do something, but I can't just do anything because some things are holding me back. So let's see, a kafir, you know, he wants to disobey Allah. He wants to go and get drunk. So he goes and starts drinking. Now, he drinks one peg, two peg, three peg. After a while, you see that this guy can't go on. He wants to go on, but he can't go on. He starts throwing up. He can't just go on. Why? Because his intention is to go on all night. But because of the restriction, limitation that reality has put on him. Because he's limited. Because he can't just do infinite. That's why he stopped from doing it. Even though he wants to do it. He wants to do it. There are some people who want to kill other people. And we see that going on. You know, there are people who have a chip on their shoulder and they want to go out and prove themselves. Right? And they're losers, you know, so they go out and they start to kill. But you see, they want to kill thousands, but they're killed after 10. After 10, they're killed. So they could not reach the 1,000. Why can't they do it? It's because, my friends, these restrictions, these realities come in place and you can't do it. So a kafir wants to disobey Allah, but how much can he disobey? He can't disobey him all the time, but his niyat is to do that. So that's why Rasulullah is saying his niyat is more evil than his action. And on the other hand, you have a mu'min, a believer. He wants to do good. But you see, there also Allah says, listen, you just can't do all the good that you want. You just can't do all the good that you want. That's it. So a mu'min starts to pray at night. He says, I want to go on. I feel like praying. I want to pray. I want to pray. And he's praying. You see that after he makes, you know, half an hour, 1 hour of prayer, and that's it. You know, he's sweating and he's tired. His legs are cramping up. Now he can't do it anymore. He can't do it anymore. Allah, he wants to do good. So why don't you make his energy infinite? No. Muqaddarat come in the way. Realities come in the way and say, no, you can't do just what you want to do. You are given the chance of 1 hour. Did you pray in that 1 hour? If you did, then that was your choice. But after 1 hour, it's not your choice anymore. Now Allah's Qadr comes in and you can't go on. This is, my friend's, reality. When we look at Muqaddarat, send a salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajum.
One more thing we need to know about Muqaddarat, my friends, is this. That just like we can't do whatever we want, we also cannot change our destiny when we want it. We can't just change ourselves when we want to also. That's not in our hands also. Because certain things, you know, take effect. And if you want to turn your life around, it's not that easy. If you want to go in another direction, it's not that easy. If you're going down life's highway, and you want to make a U-turn, you just can't make a U-turn whenever you want to. Really, you have to just go down until you get the legal U-turn to make. You see, in order to make U-turn, you see sometimes you hear your GPS, you know, make a legal U-turn when you can. Right? They just can't say, hey, we need to go that way, just, you know, switch. You can't do that. You have to find the legal turn. Now, the legal turn also comes in your life. When I want to turn my life around, it's not that easy for me to do that. Why? Because muqaddarat come in and prevent you from turning your life around. He says, no, only at that point you can do it. Only at that point you can do it. Whether good or bad. It doesn't matter whether good or bad. Allah stops you from doing it. You can't do it. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam has said,
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil.
Reading this hadith, he says, Man akala luqmata haramin. Anyone who eats a morsel of haram food, just a bite, he takes a bite of haram food, lam tuqbal lahu salatun arba'ina layla. that his salat, his prayer, is not accepted for 40 days. وَلَمْ تُسْتَجَبْ دَعْوَةٌ أَرْبَعِينَ صَبَاحًا. And his dua is not accepted for 40 days. Now what did he do? He ate a morsel of haram food. A bite. Not even the whole meal. Right? Just a bite. When he took the bite of haram food, now what happens? Now Allah has stopped or prevented him from making a U-turn in his life for 40 days. He said, now you're stuck for 40 days. Now you just can't turn around. Okay, Allah ate this. I'm sorry, but let me turn around. No, sorry. Wait the 40 days. Wait the 40 days. You just can't turn things around yourself. These muqaddarat of Allah, these things that Allah is destining for you, these are things that are preventing you from doing that. Comes in the way. And this is how Allah also does, because this is Allah also how Allah does with good doers also. People who are good doers, people who pray, people who are good, when they want to do something wrong, Allah doesn't just allow them to do it. Really, He doesn't allow you to do it. You are a prisoner of your good deeds. Yes. You are a prisoner of your good deeds. You loved the Ahlul Bayt. You used to come to the majlis of Imam Hussain. You used to cry. You used to serve. You used to all these things that are good. And out of your heart that you used to do them. Now what happens? One day you decide, you know what, I'm going to do this haram. You know what? Allah doesn't allow you. He said, it's not that easy for you to turn around. You see? Allah comes and His Qadr takes over. And you see that I intend to do haram, but I couldn't do it. Something happened that I couldn't do it. You see, good doers also, you know, they just can't turn around and do wrong. Why? Because you have made a path for yourself. Now that Qadr has come. That destiny has come that won't allow you. Both ways, good or bad, you do not have it in your choice to turn your life around. Qadr takes place and you have to wait for a longer time and wait for those things to occur that Allah wants until you're able to turn yourself around. Salawat ala Muhammad wa alihi.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa alihi Muhammad.
Let me just read some hadith for you in this regard so that you understand it from hadith also, what I just explained to you. This is from Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
He says, inna ma'a kulli insan. He says, surely with every person, malakain, there are two angels. There are two angels with every person. Yahfidhanihi, that protect him. They are appointed by Allah to protect him. فَإِذَا جَاءَ الْقَدْرُ. But when the Qadr of Allah comes, when the destiny of Allah and decree of Allah comes, خَلَّيَا بَيْنَهُ وَبَيْنَهُ. They leave him alone, they go away from him and leave him to the Qadr of Allah. Yes, two angels are appointed to do what? To protect you from accidents. To protect you from diseases. To protect you from sickness. To protect you from sin. These are angels who protect us. Allah appointed. Why? Because good doers, Allah doesn't want them to become bad. He wants to protect you. But when the Qadr of Allah comes, now the angels lift up their hands and say, now we can't do anything. Because the Qadr of Allah is what? We obey. Angels walk away and now they leave you up to what Allah has decided. Imam Hussain alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
He said, this is again, I'm just explaining what I just explained in the words of our Imams, right? He said that when a person wants to do good, then Allah gets out of his way and lets him do it. You see, when you want to do good, Allah gets out of your way and He will let you do it. But when he wants to do wrong, when he wants to do evil, when he wants to sin, then if Allah wants to do a favor on you, then he blocks you from that sin. If he wants to put a minnat and favor on you, he blocks you from that sin. If he doesn't want to favor you, he will say, all right, go ahead, do it. This is what's important, my friends. Good doers, they acquire that minnat, that favor of Allah. People who do good and keep on doing good, they acquire that favor so that when they want to do bad, Allah makes something happen to them that they cannot do it. Until they themselves feel remorse for even intending to do it. Subhanallah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Knowing these muqaddarat, you know what they do to us? They have a direct influence and effect on us. The first effect that knowing these muqaddarat have and paying attention to them and focusing on them, the first thing they have is that they remove sadness from you. If you don't want to become sad in your life, start paying attention to these things that Allah has bound you with. The minute you start paying attention to that, you see that you don't feel sadness at all. It never comes to you. Huzn, gham, sadness doesn't come to you. Because you understand the qadr of Allah. The second thing it does is that it gives you a peace of mind. Gives you a peace of mind. The third thing that it does is that it doesn't allow you to lose yourself in joy. You see, sometimes what happens is that when we are happy, you see, that's one of the times when we lose ourselves. We become too happy. You know, ecstatic, you know, just party time. Right? You go all out. So, but when we pay attention to the qadr of Allah, even when we are happy, we don't overdo it. We know where to stop. We know where to stop. If you know the qadr of Allah. These are things, you know, really, that if you pay attention to that, this is what happens. Now, the topic that I wanted to discuss was this. Knowing the muqaddarat, what are the things that affect our muqaddarat? You see, that is what we want to discuss. I just explained all of this, and unfortunately, I won't have the time to really now go into that, right? But I will mention it. So that you know it. My friends, really, we can change our actions. Right? I told you, our actions are in our hands, it's in our control. How can you change those things that are not in your control? The first of all, are you able to change them? The answer is yes. You can change taqdeer. It is possible to change taqdeer. It is possible to change things that are not in your control. How do you do it? What are the factors that change this? So my friends, what are the factors that influence your muqaddar? What is destined for you? Some things I'll mention. For example, one of the things that affect your muqaddar, what is destined for you that is not in your choice, are your thoughts. Fikr. When a person, his fikr, and his thinking starts to become better, or he starts to think more, you see Allah's muqaddarat are affected by it. Thinking is one of those things. For example, the minute you start thinking deeper, that's the time when your life becomes harder. Yes. As long as you can stay dumb, you know, your life is easy. Really, isn't it? For example, a child, you know, he's not dumb, but, you know, he is, really, his thinking is not mature. Right? His thinking is not mature. So what happens? You see, his life is easy. He's taken care of. Now, if you become an adult and your thinking is like children, we call those people retarded. Right? Now, what happens to a retarded person? His life is also easy because he is taken care of. Right? He's also taken care of. Life is easy. The qadr doesn't make it hard on you. But the minute you start thinking deeper and better and stronger and your ideology becomes stronger, that's what happens. Allah's qadr takes place. He makes it harder on you. Another thing that makes it, you know, it makes the, it changes or affects the qadr that you have is the attachment and relationships you have. Yes. If you really pay attention to this, if you are attached to Ahlul Bayt, your life becomes harder. Right? More difficult, at risk, danger. Isn't that the case? Look it around and we'll see that. We have hadith also that someone came to Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajam.
And he said that, I want to be a Shia. I want to be your Shia. So, Imam, you know, he wasn't like, you know, okay, one more member, you know. This is the Imam, you know. And the Imam said, you want to be a Shia? Then only question he's asked is that, are you ready for difficulties in life? That's what it means. If you are attached to Ahlul Bayt, your life is difficult. If you are attached to the truth, your life is difficult. Your attachments and your relationships affect your muqaddarat. They have an influence on your muqaddarat. You want to make your life easy? Leave Ahlul Bayt. It'll make it easy for you. Your life become very easy. You know, you can go over there to the Christian church, you know, start rock and roll, you know. And life becomes easy. Really, it becomes easy. But the minute you come closer to the truth and build a relationship with truth, relationship with Ahlul Bayt, your life is more difficult. This is a reality of life. These are called things that affect muqaddarat. Another thing that affects your muqaddarat is what? Your actions. Deeds. Some things you can do in life that can change your muqaddarat. For example, sadaqah. When you give sadaqah, it says yaraddu al-qada. It removes things that are not in your choice. The decree, it removes that from you. When you give sadaqah. See, an action that can have an effect and influence your muqaddarat. Another thing that influences your muqaddarat is this. If Allah loves you and if Ahlul Bayt loves you. Meaning that if Allah and Ahlul Bayt love you, it affects your muqaddarat. It makes it, you know, their love comes with challenges. You know, their love comes with challenges, really. You know, it's like, for example, you know, if the wrong person says he loves you and he likes you, you see you're in trouble. Right? In trouble, you know. Let's say the mafia boss says, oh, he's my best friend. You see, you know, you're in trouble. That's what happens. If Allah loves you and Ahlul Bayt love you, then you know what? That's also changing your muqaddar, changing your destiny or things that are not in your control. As an example, I will give you this, right? So that you understand it. A person came to the masjid of Rasulullah. At night, and he was hungry, so he prayed for rizq and asked Allah for rizq all the time, you know, the whole night. The night went by, he was praying, did not break his prayers, he kept on praying, the rizq didn't come, and he was waiting for it, it didn't happen. So, when morning came, Rasulullah came and he asked him, Ya Rasulullah, what is this? I came in your masjid, in your own place, this muqaddas place, this holy place, I prayed for rizq and you didn't give me the rizq did not come. So Rasulullah asked Allah, Allah, what happened? You didn't send him the rizq? Allah said, yes, I gave him rizq. So he told them that Allah is saying that he gave you rizq. He said, no, I didn't get anything to eat. I'm hungry, this and that. He said, Allah, he said that he didn't get anything. What did you give him? He says the best risk, because he was asking for risk, and the best risk for him is that he should stay hungry. Because if I had given him food, he would have left his worship. Sometimes, you know, when Allah loves you, it's like, he makes it harder, you know. Right? These are factors that affect our muqaddara, those things that are not in our control. But now let me come to the final factor. There are others also, but what is the most influential factor? The most effective factor. All of these are factors that we can do. But there's one factor that oversees and overwhelms all these factors. None of these factors count when that factor is in between. That one reason that Allah makes your muqaddar, your taqdeer, and things that you don't have a choice in, He makes that, and this factor influences how that is going to come about. That is what we want to know more about. That factor. And that factor, my friends, the single factor that is the most important reason why we have the muqaddar that we have, is the trials and tests of Allah. Understand this very well, because this is a part of our life that we go through every day in our life. My friends, Allah sent us in this earth to be tried, to be tested. In fact, we have been put on this earth for tests, to go through tests. And each moment that we are living is a trial for us. Now, Allah, because of that reason, because He needs to try us and test us, everything that we face and come across that we don't have a choice in is there because it is going to help test us and try. It is there for us to try. This, no matter what dua you make, when Allah sees that this is a part of your test, no dua can change that taqdeer. No one can change that taqdeer. Our problem is that we don't pay attention to this factor. If we pay attention to the factor that we are being tested, and those things that are not in our choice is our test paper, then we won't have an issue. It would be easy for us to deal with it. It will be easy for us to go through it. But because we end up thinking that, no, we are here on this earth because Allah is still constructing, you know, heaven is under construction right now. And Allah, He put us on the earth to pass time until, you know, it's done so we can go there. You know, that's what we think. And now what happens is that when we face some difficulties and hardships, we start complaining. Allah, why are you doing this? What, are you on a vacation that you're complaining? You know, that the food is not good, or the room is not kept right, or, you know, have... I mean, really, you're not on a vacation here. If you're on a vacation, then you can complain to Allah. Why this difficulty for? Allah is saying, I sent you here to test you. If you understand that, then why are you complaining for? It's a test. A test is supposed to be difficult. A test is supposed to be challenging. That's what it's supposed to be. So why are you complaining? We complain because we don't look at this time that we have and this life as we have as a test. We don't look at it in that way. We think that this is some sort of an easy time for us that we have living here, and we'll go back someday and it'll be all fun after that. Really, if we start paying attention that, you know what, we are actually in a test. When are we going to realize that we are giving an exam? Can you imagine that? You know, let's say, you know, that you have an exam and you have 90 minutes to do it. You have 90 minutes to do it. Now, you know, the exam is tough and you need each and every minute of it, right? A person who's smart goes into it saying that, listen, this is how I want to organize my exam. Do this, 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 that. He knows he's an exam. But let's say someone, you know, says, oh, I have 90 minutes. Okay, let me just daydream about something. Ah, you know, I'm in the NBA final, you know, final hoop, you know, I'm doing it. you know, and you're daydreaming. And you go on daydreaming until what happens? Until you see 1 hour is finished. I only have half an hour. And then you, in a frenzy, you start to do the test, and that test will be horrible. And what result do you expect from this? This is a person who hasn't realized that he is in a test right now, in this life. That's the situation of a person, if you haven't realized that you are sitting in an exam hall, giving a test, giving an exam paper, you have just wasted all this time in your life. Really. Now you're going to start the test? You should have started a long time ago. When the time began for you. And this is what happens. We don't feel we're in a test. The minute the person realizes that he's in a test, he will understand that it's because of these tests that we have all the muqaddar that we have. Otherwise, really, otherwise, du'as can change many things. Let me give you one hadith before I end this. So that you take this home, inshallah. Send us salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Subhanallah. This hadith is from the Prophet. He said, لَوْ دَعَى لَكَ إِسْرَافِيلُ وَجِبْرَائِيلُ وَمِيكَائِيلُ وَحَمَلَتَ الْعَرْشِ وَأَنَا فِيهِمْ. He says, if Israfil, you know who Israfil is? Yes. Yes. Israfil and Jibrail and Mikael and those who are holding up the throne of Allah, all of them, and me included, me above all of them included, if we make dua, if we make dua for what? Ma tazawwajta illa imra'ata allati kutibat laka. Listen, if we all make dua and ask Allah to give you a good wife, but if Allah has decreed a bad wife for you, then all our du'as are useless. Useless. Why? Because that is coming in the decree and muqaddar of Allah. Because that is a part of your task. People want, you know, an obedient wife. You know? And these people who want obedient wife themselves become obedient after marriage. Why is that? Really, why is that? Because now Allah has decreed, in His decree Allah says that this wife is for you, I have written for you. Why? Because this is going to be a part of your test. This is going to be a part of your test. That's it, that's your test. Give it. And then, why? Because she and her interaction with you and her nagging and shouting and getting angry is what's going to make you go towards Allah. That's what's going to make you go towards Allah. Allah decreed it. He knows how to test you. He knows how to deal with you. He has decreed it for you. So now what happens if you say, Maulana, I can't get along with her. You can't get along with her. You're not in this for a vacation. Really, this is not a vacation for you. This is a test for you. You want happiness in marriage? Wait till you go to Jannah. This wife and this husband and this pairing has been made by Allah so that it can test you to become better. See, Allah is like, you play like any sport, for example. You know, let's say basketball or, let's make it easy, ping pong, table tennis. Right? You play table tennis and you have a coach. Someone who's coaching you on that. You know what he does? Is that he will hit the ball to your right side. Right? And you'll see how you do that. He'll hit the ball to your left side to see how you play that. Then he will see where your weaknesses are, where your strengths are. And he will now play you in a way that will help you to remove your weaknesses. This is how a coach empowers his students. So he can take their weaknesses off. See, Allah is like that coach in life who's giving us these tests, and these tests are meant to do what? To remove our weaknesses and make us better. That's what they're used for. And it is these tests that is the most influential thing in deciding what is our muqaddar. What are we destined for? This is what it's deciding. And Allah is that, like, you know, looking and giving you these things so that you choose. When you make that decision, know that this is from Allah. Finish. I have to deal with this. This is my test. When you start looking at it as a test, then you will see it will become easy for you to deal with it. Really, it becomes easy for you. You know, if you wake me up in the morning after a long night, and you wake me up in the morning and give me a exam paper and say, hey, you need to do this exam, I won't even look at that exam. I'll go back to sleep. Right? Let's go back to sleep. What are you talking about, you know? Exam at this ungodly hour? Come on, get out of here. You wouldn't take that. Why? Because, really, but when you know that this is a test, it's easy to deal with it. Oh, it's an exam. I can deal with it. I am mentally prepared for it. My friends, if you don't understand that life is a test, you have a difficult time living your life. You have a difficult time living your life. Everything is going to become unexplainable to you. You won't understand what's going on. It is only when we understand that these things that are not in our choice, that are happening to us, are things that are tests for us, and because of that, Allah is making it such. Then you know what happens? Then life becomes not just bearable, but it becomes exciting. Really, it becomes exciting. When you know that you're in a test, now you can have fun with the test. Then it becomes exciting. Then it becomes like thrilling. The thrill of life is knowing that you're in a test and you're ready to give it and you're giving it. And then everything that happens in your life will become like, subhanAllah, this is so good. This is so good. Salawat ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allah says in the Quran, Alladhi khalaqa. خَلَكَ الْمَوْتَ وَالْحَيَاةِ لَيَبْلُوَكُمْ is what? Allah has given you life and death to do what? لَيَبْلُوَكُمْ to test you, to try you. That's what it's for. This life that we have is a test. Step that we have is a test. You know? The results will come out on the Day of Judgment. And if we think that we are here to relax, that's when we start complaining. People who complain, they don't even know that they're in a test. That's why they complain. This is, my friend, what's important. And hence, these exams of Allah is the most influential factor in deciding what is muqaddar for us. Now what happens is this. When you give one test, and you pass in that test, then Allah will say, good. You passed in this test, now let me try you with something better. Something stronger for you. Something better for you. The better you get at it, the harder the test will get. The harder the test will get. And yes, when we see tests that are intense and great, we have two reactions to it. Either we are so afraid of it that, you know what, we ignore it altogether and we run away from it. Or when we see great tests happening, then we look at that and say, Allah, I want to give that test. I want to give that test. This is that reaching for excellence that we learn by reading the Ziyarat of Imam Hussain. Allah, you know, my test is just this? No, I want that test. Ya laytana kunna ma'akum. I want to be with you. That test that you are giving Hussain, I want to give that test. You see, this is reaching for excellence. Maybe you're not ready for it. Maybe you're not ready for that test, and you are not. Let's say, we're not. Right? We're not ready for that test. But can we wish for it? Can we seek it? Can we dream about it? Can we actually make it a vision that we want to accomplish? That's why this dua is there for. I want to give that test. That's the test I want to give. Because when Allah took the test from Hussein and his companions, is there anyone who can look at that test and say, that was easy? Really, my friends, send us salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Really, when you look at the test that Imam Hussain gave, we are really nothing, right? And, you know, we start complaining when we get small tests. I mean, our tire gets punctured and we are angry. You know, that's it. That's how easy it is to make you lose your temperament. Wow. I mean, how can you give any other test than that? You know, some people, for example, they have a bad relationship with their spouse and that's it, they give up. So you think that you will be able to go and give that test? It won't happen. It cannot happen. This is the reason why we have these tests. This is why we can see. Where are we? Where do we stand? Why is it not hard for me? Allah, why don't you make it difficult for me? But when you look at, I mean, so we are just small, so just count us out. Let me just go to someone probably who is, you know, that we can regard as better than us. We can regard as better than us, you know, at least a little bit more than we are. You know, I'll give you the example of one alim, a very well-known alim. You know, alim that no one can deny his ilm, and no one can deny his iman because he was shaheed also. And I'm speaking about Ayatollah Mutahhari. Let me speak about him. You know, Ayatollah Mutahhari in this, you know, the amazing character that he is and the shaheed that he is, who died and was killed in Allah's way. So we have no doubt about that. This Ayatollah Mutahhari, in a memory of his, while writing a book of Karbala and doing research on Ashura, came to the point where Imam Hussain on the day of Ashura is praying his prayers, Dhuhr and Asr. You know, he made his Dhuhr prayers there. And when he made the Dhuhr prayers, it was Salatul Khawf, which is the prayers that you do when you are in fear, right? In danger. So he was like reading that, and he read with that, you know, that two companions of Imam Hussain volunteered to be a shield for Imam Hussain. They volunteered to be a shield for Imam Hussain, and the enemy obviously is trying to target Imam Hussain. But now he's praying, he's an easy target, let's shoot arrows at him. So the enemy is trying to shoot arrows at him, and these two people are, as a shield in front of Imam Hussain, are taking those arrows on themselves. I mean, they're right in front of Imam Hussain, and they take the arrows on themselves. Anytime the arrow comes, they take it on themselves. Anytime the arrow comes, they take it on themselves. Now, Hazrat Mutahhari, who's reading this, obviously the praise is there for them. wow, you know, I mean, history has praised them and lauded them for this courage, this bravery, because after that they were dead. They died right after the prayer. But until the prayer, they stayed up. They did not go down. They stayed up, right? They didn't go down. They stayed up. They defended the arrows, right? So, okay, Ayatollah Mutahhiri looks at this and he says that, you know, in my mind, I was thinking, right? Yes, it is a great feat. But then he said, really, how many, I mean, we have so many youths now, so many people now who are ready and willing to do that. And they have done it. Look at the revolution. How many youth have gone forward and given their lives? And he said, so we have so many people like them who would do that for Imam Hussein. So it's not that big of a deal. Now, we have many people, many youth would do that. And so, Ayatollah Mutahhiri says, you know what, this thought came in my mind, this idea came in my mind, and I was pondering over it. Maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, but I'm thinking that so many youth have given their lives already. So why wouldn't they do that for Imam Hussein? There's so many people out here right now, we can do that. So what is such a great deal about that? And he says that that afternoon when he was doing his research and he went to sleep and he saw a vision. He saw a vision in his dream and he saw the battlefield of Karbala. He saw that Imam Hussein is praying. He saw that Imam Hussein is praying. He saw that Sayyid is standing in front of Imam Hussein. And you know who was next to Sayyid? He says, I was next, standing next to Sayyid. I was standing next to Sayyid and I just looked around, what's going on? I saw the army in front of me, I turned around, I saw Imam Hussein praying behind me. I saw him praying behind me, and I just turned around, looked at, I knew where I am. And I saw that these people are now getting ready to shoot arrows. And as they started shooting arrows, now these arrows, they would come. And I know that I have to take it on me. I have to take those arrows on me. So I have to stand in one position. So I get myself ready, sturdy myself, get ready. And I stood there, waiting for the arrow to come. As the arrow came close, you know, I looked at that arrow, and that arrow was my death. The arrow was my death. That was a sign of my death. As it came closer, my death became closer. It became real for me. It became real for me, and as soon as it was about to hit me, I got afraid and moved away. I got afraid, I couldn't take it. And then another arrow came, another test. Now I'm in this test, I see that arrow coming towards me and coming towards me. I look at it, I want to take this one. Now I want this one to hit me, but then as soon as it came close to me, my heart started trembling and I turned away. And that arrow missed me also. And as more these arrows came, the more I see that I was twisting and turning and I was afraid to let these arrows hit me. And as soon as a few moments go by, I just turn around to see what's happening and we see, and I saw that those arrows have gone in the body of Imam Hussein. I see those arrows gone in the body of Imam Hussein, and all I can remember is those eyes that Imam Hussein is looking at me with. Can you imagine that? My friend, these tests, when you want them, really, maybe we're not ready for it, let alone the test Hussein went through. That is why you see that when on Ashura, Imam Hussein goes through the test, no one went through the test like Hussein has gone through, my friend. You know, imagine how Imam Hussein had gone through on Ashura more than anyone else. Just imagine this. Do you think that when the water stopped, Ahlulbayt still had water? They still had water that was saved, that was in the reservoir, that they had a storage. The water was there. But do you think, who do you think was the first person to stop drinking water? Do you think that Imam Hussein would touch that water knowing that he has children here? Do you think Imam Hussein would do that? I heard Imam Hussein was the first one to let go of water and food. He would let the others have it and let them drink it, let them eat, but he stopped. But then when we look at Ashura and the test he gave, before he really, Imam Hussein was the last one to go to the battlefield. He stayed thirsty the longest. You know, really, those who have been to a funeral know this, my friends. Have you been to one person's funeral? You know, you go to the graveyard, you help with this, you take the body and you take it to the grave, put it in the grave, and you see after 2-3 hours of being with the funeral, people are tired and they want to go back home. One funeral and one dead body makes you so tired. Imagine Imam Hussein as picking up 71 dead bodies from Karbala. How many bodies was Imam Hussein picking up? Can you imagine how tired he has been? Can you imagine his exhaustion? Can you imagine how much pain he has? He's picking up one body after another. And not just other people. These are people who are dear to him. They started to pick up bodies. Even when Ali Akbar died, Ali Asghar died, you see that he was picking their bodies up and bringing them back. How much did Imam Hussein do on Ashura? One man, can he do this much in one day? Imam Hussein went through that. And after all of that, when Imam Hussein fell to the ground, the last time he fell to the ground, you know what he's saying? Ridan bi qada'ik. Oh Allah, I am happy with what you have decreed for me. This is the muqaddar you have destined for me. I am happy with that. But Hussein, Imam Hussein, he died on Ashura, he was killed on Ashura, he became shaheed on Ashura. Imam Hussein went through the decree, we can understand it. He is masoom, he's an imam, he can bear this, he can go along with this. But what can I say? Hussein, if decree for you was hard from Allah, what happened? And imagine the iman and the faith and the sabr and the tahammul of Sakina after Hussein. Imagine what Sakina went through after Hussein. How hard was it for Sakina? Ashura was difficult. Sakina, who was thirsty from the night of Ashura. She's thirsty. She says that one time I was thirsty. I wanted to go and look for water. I was going from one tent to another to see if anyone has water. She would go and ask them, is there any water? And they would just look at Sakina and say, sorry Sakina, there is no water here, there is no water for you. So she went forward to one another tent and another tent until she remembered, you know, my aunt Zainab always takes care of me. She always keeps me in mind. I'm sure she has something in store for me. I'm sure she has some water there. She said, I was so parched that my lips were burning, my tongue was burning, my throat was burning. This is on the eve of Ashura. This is in Shab-e-Ashura. And she said she goes to the tent of Zainab. And she peeks inside. When she peeked inside, she said, as I was so shocked at the scene that I saw inside the tent, that I forgot about my own thirst. Sakina, what did you see? Sakina says, what I saw was my aunt Zainab trying to comfort Ali Asghar. When I saw Ali Asghar so thirsty, I forgot my thirst.
I forgot my thirst when I saw Leah's nurse so thirsty. The same Sakina, one time when they were going and this caravan came to a stop. When this caravan came to a stop, Sakina, again, their thirst was a story that came, is not ended in Karbala, it went from Karbala all the way to Sham. The thirst and the hunger of these children went all the way to Sham. What can I say? Sakina survived the journey. You know, this family of Rasulullah, truly this family of Rasulullah, it was a garden. It was a garden that had been put in one place. Rasulullah planted, Fatima and Ali planted it. And this garden was in one place. These flowers had grown in one place. But it was by the taqdeer of Allah and the decree of Allah, scattered in such a way that if some are in Karbala, some were in Sham, and the rest were in the middle from Kufa to Sham. You know, these children, these little children, that their mother's hands were tied behind their heads and they were put on camels. They were put on camels and these children were given to their mothers. They were on camels and the children were sit clinging to the clothes of their mother. Clinging to the clothes of their mother. And they would be crying. He said, "Mother, hold me." But what can the mother do? Her hands are tied. Her hands are tied. The children hold on to the clothes. And the mother, all she can do is look at them and just tell them, "My baby, hold on tighter." "My baby, hold on tighter. Don't let go." And these children, they're little babies, little children. They don't have a lot of strength. They don't have a lot of energy. They are thirsty and hungry. Their hands start to lose grip. And they start crying out to their mother, "Mother, I'm falling." "Mother, I'm falling. Help me, mother. Hold me, mother." The mother frantically tries to hold the baby. "Do something. My child is going to fall. My child is going down." And a moment will come that all she can do with helpless eyes, look in the baby's helpless eyes as the baby weakens. The grip is so infernal. He lets go, he falls, and the mother grabs out. The mother cries out, the baby falls on the ground, and the caravan moves forward. You know what that means? It means the camels behind are crushing the babies. If you go from Kufa to Sham, you see the graves of these babies that have fallen from the camels. And they're on the way, you can see them. This is the state of the children. They're thirsty and hungry. They're dying. Sakina, one time she came to a stop, and at the stop she asked her aunt Zainab, she was sitting in the lap, and she saw that the soldiers, they have their tents out and they are drinking water. She feels the thirst. The sun is hitting them in the head. She says in weakness, she is weak, in weakness, she speaks to her aunt and says, "Aunt Zainab, is it all right if I can go and ask for water? You know, they're not giving me water. Please, can I go and ask for water?" Really, Allah's curse be on those who have done this to the household of Rasulullah. What they have done to his household. Sakina in the lap of Zainab asks, can I go and ask for water? Zainab tells her that, Sakina, if your father can ask water for Ali Asghar, I don't see any problem in you asking for water. Go and ask for water. So Sakina leaves the lap and starts walking towards the tents. Towards the tents of the soldier. He walks towards the tents of the soldier. And as soon as she's coming there, Shimr looks at her coming to the tents, knows what she wants, he has guessed what she wants, he goes forward to greet her. Shimr goes forward to greet her and says, what do you want? She says, I want water, I am thirsty. Please give me some water. Give me some water so I can survive. You know, he says, all right, you want water? All right, come with me, I will give you water. So he goes and sees the person who's giving the water to the people. He takes the water back from them. He shows, you know, the water is in this water bag. And I know you want it, but tell me, I will tell you this, that my soldiers are also thirsty. You know, and they are worth more than you. They're worth more than you, so I'm going to give it to them first. But you come behind me. When there's leftover, I will give it to you. Sakina is patient. Sakina is patient. She says, all right, she goes behind Shimr. Shimr starts giving water to the soldiers in their bowls. Everyone takes out their bowl, drinks water. You know, when you are thirsty, here's what happens, my friend. When you are thirsty, and if you don't see water, maybe you can bear the thirst. But if you see someone else drinking water, it increases your thirst. He was making Sakina see other people drink water. Sakina was watching them drink water. She was walking behind Shimr. She was walking behind Shimr. And they were next to the tent. No, they were next to the tent. So Sakina is thirsty. She's weak. She sees that she's standing in the sun. So what she does is that she steps into the shade of the tent. She steps into the shade of the tent and Shimr looks at her. He looks at her, sees that she's in the shade. She said, listen, if you want water, I need you to stand in the sun. If you stand in the shade, I won't give you water. He's playing with this girl. They go forward. Sakina walks in the sun. Sakina walks in the sun. And after Shimr gives the water to his soldiers, then he looks at Sakina and says, you know, there's still water left in here. There's water left in here. But you know what? My horses are thirsty. Don't you think they should get it first? Sakina is patient. She doesn't say anything. She's waiting. She had asked her questions. She's waiting for her response. They go forward. He gives water to the animals, some of the horses there. Then he says, all right, now you want water. Sakina says, yes. Then he says, now hold your hands out. Hold out your hands. She put her hands up like you would make dua. Like how you would make dua, she holds her hands up. Shimr takes the water bag. Shimr takes the water bag and starts pouring, but he doesn't pour it on her hands. He pours the water on the ground in front of her. He says, drink from there. Sakina looks at the ground. The water is absorbed by the ground and the sand. Sakina doesn't change her position in the same position of making dua. She says, Ya Jaddi Rasulallah, my grandfather Rasulallah, see how they're treating your orphan. I am an orphan, and this is how they treat me. Matur, sorry.